The B2B sales world is in turmoil. Quota attainment is down. Revenue growth has slowed. Turnover is up. All of this is in the face of ever-increasing pressure to perform. Is it a surprise that the average sales leader stays in place for only 12 to 18 months? That's barely enough time to start executing the strategy. These problems are fixable, and we are going to serve the sales leadership community with this show. I'm Lucas Price. I've launched and exited B2B startups and built elite sales organizations. Now I want to give back by bringing you this podcast, Building Elite Sales Teams. It will be full of actionable best practices to help you excel as a sales leader. We're going to burn the churn. Let's get back to winning. Building Elite Sales Teams is on. Welcome. This is Lucas Price, and I'm here to learn with you about building elite sales teams. Imagine you've built a successful business, but now you're starting to saturate the market. The only way to continue to grow is to find new types of customers, but you have a sales and go-to-market organization that's comfortable selling to the existing customer base. How do you change the company's orientation to larger customers and expand your potential market? That's one of the topics we're going to be talking about today with an accomplished leader, Tyler Kelly from Basis Technologies. Tyler's a seasoned leader with over two decades of experience in the digital media industry. As the president of Basis Technologies, he spearheads the sales, services, and customer experience organization, collectively shepherding nearly $2 billion in annual digital advertising investment for prominent brands and agents. Throughout his 18-year tenure, he has played a multifaceted role in the organization by fostering a culture of collaboration, empowerment, and excellence. Beyond his professional accomplishments, Tyler is also an avid water skier and passionate traveler. He currently resides in Dallas, Texas with his family. Tyler, welcome.
Thank you so much. That was an amazing intro, so I appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about what drew you to sales as a profession?
Yeah, I think my father was in sales, so I got to learn from him and see his lifestyle. And I think when I was in high school, I was competitive. I played sports. And when I realized I wasn't good enough to be in the NFL or the MLB, I thought his lifestyle was really strong. So I went to school, I studied for advertising and made sure that I could basically follow in his footsteps to take this next step.
You started off in sales, doing several years of kind of feet on the street sales before you transitioned into sales management. What was that transition like for you?
It was the hardest part, I think, of moving from sales to sales management is letting go and teaching others to do what you can do and then scale. Because if you don't let your sales team scale, then it's a problem. You just one person in the cog. So therefore, I think the biggest transition was letting go of things that I held so closely as I moved into the management. And then, of course, there's people. And I always joke that every problem comes on 2 feet. With that, just the headaches of managing people, pushing them, making sure that they're doing the same thing and not judging them on how you act, but how they can operate, because we're all different people.
A lot of times what I find is that the things that people are good at as sales leaders and sometimes come from what they struggled at when they were salespeople, like the struggle made them stronger and understand how to lead that area. Is that something that you've experienced at all or something you can relate to?
For sure. I remember I used to hate Salesforce. Like it was like when I was in sales, I was like, I'm going to be the best salesperson. I'm going to break every record and not do Salesforce. And now that I'm in management and have been for a long time, I'm like, you got to put Salesforce because management, you're blind. You just have to know you're talking to investors or you're talking to your board or whatever it is. And so it's just so important. And I think salespeople sometimes thinks it's big brother, but it's really about just educating the entire organization. And I didn't see that when I was a seller. I felt like it was big brother versus actually trying to help the organization be better.
So now you believe in the power of Salesforce to bring strategic and tactical clarity to the business, and you're able to convey that to the team, and you have a team who believes in it now?
I do. And we've built scorecards around it. That's how I really run the sales team and see who's being effective, who's not. It's just our source of truth. And so that was something I definitely did not see as a salesperson that now in management, I 100% see.
Yeah. You mentioned when you were younger, you were competitive and you were an athlete. A lot of times I find that the drive that someone has to make them successful in sales, sometimes that overlaps with being an athlete, but not always. But usually it comes from something in their lives. There was something that kind of gave them that drive. Is there anything that you'd point to? Hey, this was a defining moment for me where I realized this is I can do what it takes. I'm going to push through the challenges and become successful in sales.
I don't know if there was actually one moment. I think I was not the best athlete, but I always had to work harder and try harder. Mm-hmm. And my father was never the easiest person. So I think he always was expecting more, but it actually drove me and helped me thrive. And so to this day, he's my biggest fan, but I'm also I definitely look at him as my mentor and helping me to guide me and get me on this journey. And we are going to lose. We're going to lose a lot. In sports, if you lose 50% of your games, you're terrible. In sales, you only win 10% of the time, probably. So you just have to get used to that rejection. And I think through sports and through mentorship, you just learn to overcome it and be okay with the losses. And if you can do that and really strive for the wins, it makes you a really good salesperson.
So you've had obviously an amazing run at Basis Technologies, starting there basically at the beginning, bringing it to where it is today. And I'm sure during that period of time, you've gone through changes where it's been like, all right, what got us here is not going to get us there. And you have to start convincing the sales organization, making changes across the go-to-market organization in order to change the orientation. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those challenges and how you found your way through those challenges?
Yeah, to your point, there's been so many almost misses and times to pivot. And I've been with Basis for 19 years. And so in that, the amount of times you have to pivot to stay relevant is massive. And advertising has changed completely through that time. So the idea of change is always constant. Now, how do you convince your sales team? A lot of it is, I would try to lead by example. I would say, we need to go after this client. So I'm going to go try to spearhead and show the team that we can go do this. From there, they start to believe. And I always feel like salespeople follow leaders more than managers. And so if you can get out there, show them how to do it, prove that it's done, they will believe and then they will go tenfold. If you just tell them to do it without actually doing the work, I think it falls flat. And so I think every time we've had to make those pivots, I've just always tried to be the lead and try to be that tip of the spear into those new ventures.
When you think about like the personnel side or the strategy side, what are some of the like really hard decisions to make where it was like, okay, this is we're going this way. Now that we have to pivot and go a new direction, what are the factors that we have to weigh in order to decide? And it ended up leading you to something that was felt risky or felt dangerous.
Yeah, it's actually relevant right now. I think it's real time. In the last 2 years, because we are so large in terms of revenue, it's hard to grow at a 20-30 rate if you're just winning small clients. And when Basis started, our whole thought process was to put people in regional offices like Arkansas and Oklahoma and having people all over the place to get those relationships. And that was great, but they're pretty small market. Now we've changed our ICP to say the only people we want you going after have over 20 million in digital media spend. And with that, a lot of people are scared. They might not have the confidence. And so I think leading through that is difficult. I also think people self-select out. And so I think when you set the standards of where you want to go and you set the commission structure to where it needs to be, people either get on board or they won't. And as a sales leader, I think you have to have thick skin because of the losses, but also because you're going to lose people. And not everybody has the skill set to move from an SMB into an enterprise salesperson. And that's okay. They don't have to. There's a lot of money in SMB, but we're moving in a different direction now. And we need to make sure that the people that are here have the confidence to go talk to C-level executives at very large companies. And that's hard to do.
We're challenging to get right and probably did some great things and also learned some lessons along the way. The two things that come to mind is like getting the customer communications right, letting your customers know what's going on. There's probably challenges there. And then communicating to your sales organization and previewing for them what's going to happen. And I imagine you want to have some communication before, oh, here's your new comp plan. One of the two directions in terms of how you manage to go change and communicate it.
We had had some success, obviously, moving into the enterprise. And so we could at least point to that and show, here's the exponential growth that we can get. And so as a salesperson, you only have so much time in the day. And so where are you going to fish? And we joke a lot. You have a bucket and you scoop a ton of minnows, you have thousands of minnows. If you get a tuna, you have a tuna in there, and a whale, you have bucketfuls. And reality is, if you're going to fish, let's go for the whales. Let's fish where the big fish are And I think that's been the big shift. It's showing people that, hey, our products, our services, everything that we can do is going to help these large customers, and we know it. So why waste your time on these small ones? Because then you can point to that commission structure and say, if you land one of these, this is your wealth moving forward. And that's a big driving factor for a lot of salespeople. And those are the salespeople I want that are here to try to earn and do big things.
So as you were approaching this change, had the business changed enough and that there was most successful, that it was like a very smooth transition? Or were there things that you needed to like make sure that you got right in terms of communicating it with your sales organization? And like you said, you mentioned that people can self-select out. You definitely are not in a situation where you want everyone to self-select out.
No.
But some people to realize that this is a bigger and better opportunity for them. How do you make sure that they're buying into that? You gave us one great example, actually. You set the example. They follow your lead. What are other things that you need to watch out for in terms of communicating that to them and getting the vast majority of the team on board with you?
Yeah, I think one, that first part you said, but number two is we put together an entire thing. Why now? Why are we doing this now versus keep waiting or get ahead of it? And to be honest, our technology is always catching up. It's always changing and evaluating and moving forward. And so with that, at what point do you say now is the time? And so I think with our team, we said, here's the why now. And it's because of these tech features, because of these things that we can do for these customers. And then here's the proven success. And here's actually documentation, how we roll it out. We actually built an entire consulting department now that actually can go in and really evaluate. And so them seeing that they have this support and this is the why now was a huge pivot for us into this next venture of going after enterprise clients.
I went through a transition at one point. I wouldn't say it's similar, but there are some similarities. In this case, we had a large sales organization that was, a lot of them were, most of the deals were self-sourced, but there was no self-serve component for the customers. And so every deal went through a salesperson somewhere. And then we were turning on self-serve and we realized, okay, some of these deals are going to stop going to salespeople. That's going to dry up some of the leads, but we're also going to be able to like, look at what's happening with these customers who self-serve and like figure out which of those could be upsold. And so there might be better opportunities. The salespeople will be able to better understand what they should focus on and what not. And part of the message that I tried to communicate to the sales team is like, when you're in a technology company, the world's going to change. That's just a given that there's going to be changes. And as an individual, each of us get to decide whether we're going to be a victim of the change or whether we're going to lead out front and be part of what makes great things happen for the company. And that was a message that I tried to give over and over again before when we could see that the change was coming, but it wasn't here yet. So that hopefully it really sinks in and people are understanding by the time the change happens that they have a choice in terms of which direction they're going to go and how they're going to feel about this change.
You nailed something that we talk about a lot, which is we do a lot of conscious leadership. And if you're below the line in conscious leadership, you're a victim, villain, or even a hero. But those are the three areas you sit in when you're below the line. And to your point, like, how do you be that change agent? How do you go push that forward? And I think you just summed it up very great, which is the change is constant. We're always going to be doing it. Don't be a victim. And how do we go push through and get this thing done to help the company and to help yourself grow and be better?
Apart from sales, you've made this decision, you're communicating it to sales, you're helping the sales organization transform in part by setting the example and the other things we talked about. Prior to that, I imagine there are probably some constituencies within the company who didn't want it, who were against making this decision, against this change. And there were, you said that you'd felt eliminated some of the risk by going and working with these big customers. But besides having gotten some of the bigger customers, what were some of the challenges in terms of deciding to make this decision?
I don't try to do things in a vacuum. We always bring the team in. And so our leadership team came together actually end of last year. And we just discussed what's happening, what's going on with the business. Obviously, a lot of people do quarterly strategy meetings, things like that. But this is a special offsite that we flew out. And we're like, how's everybody feeling? And everyone feels like Groundhog Day, meaning that we keep doing the same things and we're not getting any further in getting those growth rates that we want. So then it's like, we have to do something drastic. Okay. How do we actually make this big shift? And so we did make the big shift to say, and you can only call on these customers as we move forward. And that's scary. But at the same time, we're already seeing the results with our pipeline being the largest it ever has. People are spending the time with the right customers, and we're getting indoors that we've never gotten into before. But the burning of the boats was definitely the hard part, which is to say, we're going to get rid of small customers because they're killing our services team, and we're going to move upstream, and you have to have the confidence to do that. But I didn't do it by myself. I had my CMO, I had my head of operations, everybody aligned to say, this is the direction we're going to go. Are we all in? Because if we're not all in, this won't work. And yeah, at the leadership level, if you're not aligned, there will be dissension. But we were all aligned. We all agreed in that meeting that this is the direction we're going to go. And then we completely changed our sales process, where we're going, our ICP. And so far, knock on wood, it's been successful.
One of the phrases I hear, and I think maybe it comes from the early days of Amazon leadership, was that sometimes you have to disagree and commit, where there might be people in the room who are like, all right, I think we should go that way, but I understand we're going this way and I'm going to commit to it. Is that, I've always found that challenging, and I'm always like really wanting to try to get people on board rather than disagree and commit.
I think you always want that, but I think if you have a good communication leadership team and people are communicating, they're talking, they're understanding, we always talk about shoulder to shoulder. There's no light between us, and whatever the decision is, that's the direction we're going to go. Because if we're not all doing that, then it will fall apart. And I truly believe that. And the team has really stepped up and moved this direction. And the belief is palpable now. Like when I go out, and I was actually in Mexico this week with our international team, and they're even feeling it, like in Latin America, hey, we can go win big people. We can go do this. And a year ago, it was not the same. And so just by changing that mentality and that mental shift has helped us tremendously. And the confidence, and I cannot express enough how much confidence in your product, confidence in yourself, and confidence in that you can actually help the customer grow and be better is key to success of any company.
As you've gone through this experience, are there any things that you've noticed, oh, this is a mistake we easily could have made? Or if one of our listeners is out there thinking about, hey, I need to make a similar type of change in my organization, what would be like a common mistake that they should watch out for?
Probably a lot. But I think the biggest one that I see is that you say you want to do something, because we've talked about going bigger for years, yet we never put any parameters in place and we didn't hold people that accountable. And i.e., hey, we want to go bigger, but they're still out there selling to small customers, and we don't say stop, we don't change anything. And they keep just repeating the same patterns because that's what they know. Okay. This time, I think the biggest difference this time is that here's all you're allowed to call on. If we see you calling others, like, we're going to have conversations and we're going to have to change it. And so I think the accountability is the biggest piece. You can say whatever you want, but if you're not holding people accountable, and I've definitely done that many times, where I say something, don't hold people accountable, the numbers are okay, we keep moving on to the next year, which was a Groundhog Day that we had created.
You're bringing up painful memories for me, actually, with that answer, as I think about it. An experience I went through where we spent a lot of time talking about, all right, this is the new strategic direction, and then let other priorities come in and take its place, and just really said, called it done, even though we weren't done with it, and just moved on from it after we'd spent all this time on it, because we didn't have those things in place to continue to enforce it and make sure that it stayed the strategic direction. So that's some great advice. So one of the other things I wanted to ask you about is, when we talked before this recording, we talked about how you have a direct sales team and an agency sales team, and some of the things and some of the differences between them. When you think about building a playbook or building the go-to-market motions between those two teams, how are they different and how are they similar?
They're very different for us in the advertising world, because advertising agency, with our technology, we're really selling, how do we create a better business? How do we create more efficiency? And how do we get you more profit? When we talk to a brand or direct client, they just want to sell more of what they're trying to sell. So it's a lot more of a media conversation. And so the skill sets are very different. And so as we broke out the teams, we wanted to make sure the agency team has a lot more business, how to run a business, how to run an agency, how are we helping you save money, not just media performance, but actually how do we actually create efficiency? Where my brand direct team needs to be very smart and very good at media overall and creating better performance for our end client. And having those confidences to go talk to those people. So on the brand side, it's about media. And on the agency side, it's about running a better business. They both kind of overlap though, to your point. A lot of brands will also try to bring media in-house. And therefore, there are cost efficiencies that both teams need to know. And then, because a lot of agencies or a lot of brands are using agencies, we also use the brand team to help push into agencies our product to say, this is going to be the best for your brand. You should have your agency use it. So there's a lot of collaboration every time. We don't have very many offsites that don't include everybody. It's usually together because the message is very similar at the end of the day. And what we're trying to do is similar at the end of the day, but they are very different go-to-market strategies.
Both sides need to have high business acumen, but the business acumen is on different topics. For one, it's running an agency. And for the other, it's like all of the intricacies of media buying and media performance. When you're thinking about hiring someone on one side or the other, are you looking for slightly different things in that seller? Are you looking for different traits?
Yeah, for sure. Our brand sellers, I look for people who actually have planned and bought media, because teaching somebody media is a lot harder than teaching somebody how to sell. And it's just, there's so many nuances. Media is very fragmented, especially when you're talking about search, social, display, media, all those pieces. So on the brand side, I definitely look for people who have a deep knowledge of media and have practiced and been in that space. On the agency side, I definitely look more for who can get into the C-suite, who has the confidence, and who can actually talk about P&Ls, who can talk about how they're operating their business with authority. And so they are very different people, and people have made the shifts between. So I'm not saying you can't, but for the most part, our most successful sellers on the brand side have media experience. And then I think on the agency side, it's the confidence and the belief in our product.
So on the brand side, the places that they're working are not necessarily the C-suite then?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. A lot of times you're working with the VP of marketing or possibly the CMO, which is the C-suite, but usually that's where we end up tending to get the most success. But it's usually that VP of advertising. And so on that side, on the brand side, it's very successful there. What we've learned on the agency side is that if we're not talking to the C-suite, it's very hard to get change, because our product actually suggests that you can do more with less. And a lot of people at the VP level or media or whatever are trying to build bigger teams a lot of times. So having a product that actually helps scale down sometimes is threatening to their career. And so we really like to get to the C-suite to be like, this is really about your profitability and how do we get you more profitable and how do we get you more efficient? And that's not a blanket statement. There are definitely a lot of VPs and other people that definitely care about shrinking their team and doing the right thing for the company. But we just have had more success when we get to the CEO, CFO of the agency side.
And have you had to put real clear kind of rules of engagement in place to avoid channel conflict, or is that not really an issue in terms of the target market?
No, there are a lot of rules in place, and we definitely have channel conflict. And where there is, the good news is I think our teams collaborate very well. And so I'm always a big proponent of just bring it up early, because if you wait until you already closed it or it's close to selling, then it's World War III and we've got to deal with a bunch of differing opinions on who owns it, who gets what. The good news is an agency and a brand are very clear. The problem that we run into is a lot of times a brand seller will sell in, but then the agency runs the business. And then how do we deal with it? And then in those cases, a lot of times we will do a split. I am a big fan of splits as long as I know both parties are working hard at it. So I'm okay with that. But the line of demarcation is pretty obvious. And then we still run into issues when there is that cross collaboration. But we can just deal with it. We have conversations and then we either split it or we don't. And we have that all documented of when we split, how do we split, i.e. if the agency is doing 75% of the work in a brand, but we sold it through the brand, we'll do like a 75-25 split. If it's truly both parties working together, it's a 50-50 split. And so we document that out. So it's all out there for the team to see. So there's nothing, when they act shocked, you're like, this was already paper. This is what it is. Let's just now work through it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So getting the communication clear up front prevents a lot of pain down the road. So we talked a little bit about the traits, the different traits between and the backgrounds between a channel and brand seller. What about the actual go-to-market motion and the stages that you track in Salesforce and stuff like that? Are they pretty similar in terms of, are you using the same primitives in terms of the sales process? These are the meetings we're going to have. Or is there a lot of divergence there as well?
There's a small divergence just in terms of the actual stages, we have both, we have two different stage setups in Salesforce for each team, but they're very similar overall. The stages are different, but we use Medic for everything. And hopefully a lot of listeners are conscious of what Medic is, but it's a sales qualification tool that we use. And we use that across all teams, but the stages are different within our Salesforce. And how do we measure it? How do we measure activity?
Some people have told me that, and I know this is different in different companies, but curious about your reaction to this. Some people in the channel sales world have told me that when direct sales, a lot of it is about disqualifying opportunities. This isn't a good opportunity for us for various reasons. And so I'm going to spend my time on the great opportunities. And in channel, you're always trying to keep the door open and you're okay. If it doesn't close this year, it'll close next year. Do you see it that way in terms of channel, or you still want to get your team focused on their active work being on the most active opportunities within the channel?
My belief is you need to do both. You need to keep those relationships thriving and alive, whether they are a right seller or right prospect right now or in the future, but you need to keep those. A lot of our deals close 3 years after we make those first initial touch points. And that's on the brand and agency side. So the channel versus direct, it's on both sides. Keeping those relationships, knowing that we care and that we're always going to be there is big for us. And I think for most companies. And so I don't look at, hey, do we just disqualify and kick them out? Because you never know where they're going to land a different job or where they're going to go. And so keep those relationships strong, because I do believe more and more even today that sales is relationship based. So much of the, even the C-suites that I talk to are like, I want to work with people I like. And that still happens today. And now in a day and age where we all get bombarded with emails and we have the BDRs and SDR programs across all these companies, everyone's in flooded with sales reach out. And so I think if you can break through that noise because you have a relationship, it's going to make you stronger and stronger. And so that's what I tell my team is just don't give up on any of the relationships. You don't know where they're going to end up or be, and keep those and foster them throughout your career. A lot of my success today is people I met 20 years ago. And then they'll stay friends and I can call them up and ask for help or advice or even their business. And that's the other piece. You need to ask for the business. Even though they're your friends, you can still ask for the business. And I'm amazed at how many people don't want to do that. I'm like, you're friends with them. Just say, how do we work together? What's the barrier? And a lot of people, I think, try to keep friends and business separate. I'm a big believer in if you're friends, you can have any conversation.
Yeah. As we think about some of the key pillars that we talked about today, we talked about going through big changes, like changing your ICP. We talked about the differences between the channel side and the direct side. What are some of the takeaways that you'd give our customers to wrap up the conversation, big picture? What are some of the most important things that we talked about today?
I would say really understanding who your customer is and getting that tight, knowing that can always evolve, but understanding who it is and giving your team a direct assignment against them is massive. I would say that is probably the biggest thing that I've learned over the years is really getting your team focused and driven towards one outcome. And instead of trying to spray and pray, which we've done for years, getting really focused will really help you as you move forward in your sales management and career. I think that's probably the biggest. And the other piece is just as we're going through this, over communicate. I think people will always come up with the most negative thing if you're not communicating. They never think, oh, Tyler's doing the right thing for us. No, it's the exact opposite unless I'm over communicating. So communication is key through any transition. Change will always happen. Like you said, with every technology company, change is constant. And so therefore you have to be over communicating, get the team on board and give them the confidence to go to the next step as you move through it.
Yeah, I love those. I would also add, based on what I heard from you today, love when you talked about setting the example, leading by example and showing people what's possible. And then when you say you want to do something, you can talk and talk about it, but that's not going to do anything until you start to put the pieces in place, the accountability to enforce the strategic direction. So those are a couple of my great takeaways from the conversation today. Tyler, where can our listeners find you online?
Online, we have basis.com. If you're interested or if you're in advertising, we'd love for you to check out our sites. And then also my LinkedIn is just Tyler Kelly at Basis. And so I'm easy to find. Please reach out if you have any questions or concerns. Love to hear from you and hopefully we can keep in touch.
If you enjoyed this episode of Building Elite Sales Teams, please leave us a review in your podcast app. You can find more of our content online on our blog at yardstick.team. And if you have any feedback from us, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Thank you for joining. Thanks for joining us today on Building Elite Sales Teams. Please remember to give us a 5-star review. And if you want more information about Yardstick, you can find us at www.yardstick.team. You can follow me or connect with me on LinkedIn by searching for Lucas Price.